Well, I'm carrying on where Peter left off. I sort of regard myself as a truth maker, at least I did until just now, and I think I've got problems. But Peter talked about one of the key problems of the truth maker theory, which is negative truths. Now, the other one is modality, how things might have been. Now, I'm accepting the truth maker theory as the only realist theory of truth. Now, Peter regards himself as a Rottweiler realist. This is the expression that was used by Tim Williamson. Okay, we can discuss that after. Now, truth bearers can be sentences, statements, assertions, and thoughts, all of which express propositions. And truth makers are the way some things in the world are. Now, I don't want the way things in the world are to be an abstraction. I want it to be those very things, though I accept that it's quite difficult to state that in a non-circular way. I want there to be an asymmetric reaction between the way we say things are and something out there that makes them true. Okay. So if there are 57 people in the room, more or less, it's the 57 people actually in the room that would make that true. And the proposition or statement is true if it correctly represents a way things actually are. Now, you may disagree, but this is the presupposition of what I'm going to argue for. Okay. Now, a modal proposition states what is possible. It's a general term to cover possibility, necessity, and impossibility. And it can also assert what might be the case, what might have been the case, but it doesn't state what actually is. Now, I got interested in this. I don't know how many of you were at the necessity and possibility weekends that Rudy House put on a few months ago. And a wonderful talk by Bob Hale, who is a logician way beyond my league. He's a metaphysician and a logician mathematician. And I was looking at his handout, and if you've got Bob Hale's handouts at home and read them through, then he says, probably a lot better than I'm going to do, what I'm going to talk about today. But this is really an attempt to understand what he was saying. I thought, this is really brilliant stuff. I don't quite get it. And because I don't...
Just interrupt and say, of course, his talk is on the website.
So it is on the website, and I downloaded the handouts because I wanted to make sure I got my facts right, because I am a novice in modal logic and pretty much of a novice in propositional logic and predicate logic. But I fear I'm going to talk about them briefly just to show you what the problems are. You don't have to learn anything or do any exercises or do any truth tables. Okay. But the point is that modality creates a problem for truth, our theories of truth and truth making, because it talks about what is not the case. Right, now these are examples, I hope. I'm not going to discuss them in detail, but you can just have a quick look. I will discuss them at the end. Okay. And pigs might fly, most of us would think it's false. Necessarily, batches are male, we would agree with. We'd agree with three. Probably agree with four. Agree with five, though Mike might disagree. Six, we've talked about, that's false. Seven, 11 players in a football team, true. Might have been 13 if the rules had been set up otherwise. But there couldn't have been zero players in a football team because you've got no football team. So I think eight will be controversial because people will throw electrons at me. And I think that 9 and 10 are true, but you might disagree. Okay. Now, the problems with modality and truth is that with those sentences I put on the board just now, most of you will have had very little difficulty in stating whether you thought they were true or false. we might disagree about one or two. I'm sorry that the flyer sort of went wrong here, but given that those statements that you saw just now concern facts which do not obtain, there are two key problems which arise with relation to their truth. First is how to account for it within a logical system, because you have to, so that our arguments come out valid and our theories come out true, whether they're logical theories or theories in science, and provable. So that's where the truth matters technically. Now, there's a deeper second question, which is the one that I don't really quite address but will open up for discussion, which is to state why a modal statement is true or false. What is its truth maker? So most of what I'm going to do is try and account for the truth of a modal statement within the systems that were developed, and say that that does not address question two. It leaves it untouched. Okay, so this is a quick whiz through the key ingredients of propositional logic. Okay, so first ingredient, you've got very simple sentences with a subject and a predicate, like peace fly and bachelors are male. And then you've got ways of putting them together that track the truth. You've seen these before. When, this is conjunction, and, or, if, then, and the biconditional, if and only if. Now, you don't have to learn these or worry about them. The negation operator, the only difference between the negation operator, which is in 3, and those in 2, is that operates just on one sentence, and the others, really, they're dyadics, they operate between 2 sets of ideas or 2 propositions. Okay, now you combine them in ways which are beautifully clear. Pig's fly is false. Bachelors are male is true. With conjunction, both have to be true, one is false, so the whole sentence is false. Okay. Pigs fly, right, this is disjunction or. Now, with disjunction, only one of the conjuncts has to be true. That is the case here, because one is false, one is true, the whole thing is true. Here, we stick the negation operator in front of pig's fly. That makes it true. Bachelors are male is true. So sentence 13 is the true equivalent of 11. Now, the point to take away here is that you've got a simple... all these logical operators are truth functional. They affect the truth value of the sentences in which they occur. Okay, that's all you need to remember from this. All the truth functional operators, I think, are on this slide. If I'm wrong, tell me after. As I say, I don't regard myself as a logician, but I'm just trying to understand this because I want to understand the problems with modality. Okay, now predicate logic is a bit more complicated. On the first slide, the slide just now, we had connectives connecting whole little sentences. Here we dig inside the sentence to explain in more detail, to represent in more detail what is going on. So, the key ingredients which you add to the previous set are the following. You've got two kinds of variable. You probably know what a variable is from maths, exactly the same kind of thing. So, you've got one for the subject of a proposition, which would be like pigs or bachelors, okay? And these are represented by lowercase letters. You've got one for the predicate of a proposition, which would be either fly or is male, and those are higher case letters from that end of the alphabet. There are conventions about this, but you needn't remember it. Two quantifiers. Now, quantifiers tell you vaguely how many they are. There are. Now, it's a bit misleading, but I'll I won't discuss it. The universal quantifier is all written like that. The existential quantifier is some, usually taken to mean there is at least one written as you see. Pigsty, in this notation, adding this to what we had before becomes for all x, so the quantifier goes outside a bracket. If x is a pig, then right hand arrow, then x flies. Okay, it's not the case that pigs fly becomes, right, for all x, if x is a pig, then you just stick the negative operator here in front of what is basically a symbol for a sentence. It's not the case that pigs fly. If x is a pig, x does not fly. Now, as soon as you get quantifiers, you have domains. Because you might want to say, for example, oh, everyone was drunk. Now, you don't mean all the people in the entire world. So you would have what's called an interpretation, a kind of glossary, to tell you what the P's and the F's stand for. Okay, so that it's not all, well, here it would be all the pigs in the world, which is why we put it like we have. If it's a pig, then it doesn't fly. Okay, but as soon as you get quantifiers, you need to have an interpretation and the domain over which the quantification takes place spelled out. So here's here the domains are pigs and flying things. So you just add that little note to your table or whatever it is. Okay, so that's basic logic. Now, problem, classical versus modal logic. Classical logic, as we saw, is designed to assign truth values to statements of how things are and not with how they might be or might have been. So it can handle pigs fly, but it can't handle pigs might fly. So this is a worry to philosophers. Well, I don't know if it's a worry or not, but logicians, it is a problem to be solved in. They set about doing it probably in the early 20th century, and by the middle of the 20th century, various systems were built up, and they include two further operators that you'll be familiar with if you came to Bob Hale's talks. That's necessarily known as box, roughly, and possibly known as diamond. Okay, so pigs might fly becomes... Okay, for all x, if x is a pig, then possibly x flies. Okay, do you see that? So here, pigs don't fly. Don't is for all x, if x is a pig, then it's not the case that x flies. Here, instead, you've got the diamond. You've replaced the doesn't with a possible. right, okay. I'll move on. Okay, a little bit more about modal logic. Now, necessity, possibility, and impossibility are interdefinable. And this sort of makes intuitive sense, really. So a proposition which is necessarily true, that certainly couldn't possibly be false, is not... And that's how you would write it. So P just stands for any old proposition. So necessarily P has the same meaning as not possibly not P. And you can see how the symbols work. So a proposition which is possibly true, a possible truth, is not necessarily false. So stated in English, I think these definitions do make sense. So possibly P equals not necessarily not P. Okay. Now, this is not a definition, but just something which is sort of obvious, really. It's an axiom. A proposition which is actually true is possibly true. You think about that for a minute. And that's how you'd write it. If P, then possibly P. Because if it weren't possible, it wouldn't be actual. Now, the definitions and this axiom make intuitive sense, but we have problems, okay? The discovery of these nice little symbols to add to the system don't quite throw up problems. Okay, this is a problem that Quine worried about, as a result of which he said, modality is rubbish, forget about it. It's a problem of extensionality. I'm not going to explain this in great detail, just give you a couple of illustrative examples. There are lots of questions that I don't discuss, like what is it? So if we demodalize, if we take the necessity out of two of the sentences of slide two, we've got the number eight is even, okay, which is true. And we've got the number of planets is even, which it is now deemed to be since Pluto got demoted, okay? So eight planets, number of planets. Now, the number eight and the number of planets sort of mean the same thing. They refer to the same thing. Like Eileen and the current speaker refer to this object. Okay, now there's a law about this in logic, okay? Both these sentences illustrate an important principle in non-modal logic. Okay. So co-referential, co-extensional terms like Fawzia and the chairman of the Filsoc, okay, both refer to the woman sitting in the middle there, whom you know. Okay, so co-referential or co-extensional terms, they mean more or less the same thing. When substituted, should not affect the truth value of the sentences in which they occur, and indeed they don't here, as I'm sure you'll agree. Now, this all goes haywire when the necessity operator is added back in, as it was on that slide four that we saw. Okay, so the number eight is necessarily even. I think most of us would agree with that. I'm not sure quite how a mathematician would argue for it, but we didn't. So it's not possible for 8 to be an odd number, given the nature of numbers, given the fact that it's divisible. Now, the number of planets is necessarily even is clearly false, because we used to think it was 9. And it could have been otherwise if we recategorize the kinds of things which we call planets. Okay. Yeah, now the problem is that the necessity operator, the box, which just looked like another neat little thing that you stick inside your brackets, it's not truth functional. And compare it to the negative sign, which is, although they go in exactly the same place, look as if they operate in exactly the same way. Peter's frowning, that's a bad sign. So unlike the negation operator, it doesn't alter the truth value of sentences in a systematic way. It does alter the truth value, as we saw, but how the hell does it do that? With pigs fly, it's dead easy. Pigs fly is false. We know that. Stick the negation operator in front of the bracket and we reverse the truth value. Okay? Is everybody happy so far? Okay. Right. Another way in which modality is in a mess. Now, the various systems of modal logic, which all had sort of did different jobs. I'm not going to go into the detail, but I can give you I can give you references for places where you can look this up. Okay, the various systems of modal logic all made different basic assumptions about how necessity and possibility fit together. and they come up with increasingly complex strings of axioms and theorems, just like this. In the same way as you can iterate the negative sign, so not not becomes positive. If it's not the case that pigs don't fly, that means pigs do fly. You've got the same with these. So you end up with that. Okay, now what do you think that means? It's not the case that necessarily, possibly P. And, okay, I need to go on. Now, in one of the later systems of modal logic called S5, the one that's used for metaphysics, for metaphysical and logical possibility, it's got some reduction rules. If we use those, we can eliminate all the boxes and diamonds except for the last one. So we end up with, you can work this out for yourselves, you just strike out all those boxes and diamonds between them. We end up with that, and which is, it's not the case that possibly P and not possibly P are both true. Now that sounds a bit of a mouthful, but that long string of stuff at the top is simply the modal form of a fundamental law of logic, which is that a proposition and its negation can't both be true. So thus far, modal logic gives strange results, as happened with the Pluto case. Doesn't reflect everyday usage. There are several modal systems, some of them incompatible with each other. And it gives us syntax and structure, but no semantics. We need clear definitions of diamond and box. Possible worlds to the rescue. Now I can hear, I can imagine groans coming, because people have heard a lot about possible worlds and got fed up with them. And that's because most people talk about the ontology of possible worlds and what they are. I'm not discussing that at all. I've always said that possible worlds are a logical tool, and this for me is a kind of way of seeing how that logical tool works. Okay. They are not concrete entities, a la David Lewis. If you want a definition, it would simply be instead of ways the world might be, I suppose, or might have been. So here is, I should have given you a picture of Kripke. He developed a possible world semantics in a series of papers between 59 and 63. I think his first one he wrote when he was 17. This kid is a geek out in Nebraska somewhere, you know, incredibly clever. Stuns all the profs at Harvard. And he's done all his work on logic in four papers by the age of 22, or even less perhaps. So, necessity and possibility have got a nice definitions. Necessarily P, written like that, it's necessarily true if it's true in all possible worlds, and it's possibly true if it's true in some or at least one possible world. Okay. Now, does the all and the sum ring a bell? Because it should have done. I can't go back to the slide. But do you remember this, the second slide of symbols, which is the one where I talked about quantifiers, the upside down A and the back to front E, the all or and the existential quantifier sum. Possibility and necessity are not sentential operators like negation, even though they look as if they are when you see them in front of the pig's fly in brackets, but they're quantifiers. And that's why they're not truth functional, because quantifiers don't add anything to the meaning of a proposition. Does that make sense? Is everyone happy with that? I realise I should sort of zap back. I think the only way I can step back is to get rid of the flying in, which I like. Okay, so the domains over which they quantify are stipulated sets of possible worlds, depending on the type of modality. Okay, so these domains of possible worlds are what we think of, Lucy, is the varieties of modality. We talk about logical, it's logically possible that such and such, it's metaphysically possible, epistemically possible, that's an interesting one, physically possible, mathematically possible or necessary, deontically possible, that's to do with ethics, legally possible or permissible. Okay. So, Kripke and others suggest how the various systems of modal logic, which I haven't discussed, map onto the varieties of modality that we actually use. So, system D, I thought this would appeal to a lot of you, maps onto deontic necessity. This is the necessity and possibility, the modality which concerns what one must or must not do, ought or ought not to do. Very useful in ethics and the law. Okay, and its key axiom, all of these systems, I think there are about six or seven of them, is, if P is necessary, then P is possible. It's a very low-level axiom that probably will appear in all the other systems as well. Now, we have with deontic logic, there's a problem. Because ought, which comes out as necessity operator, implies can, but it doesn't imply that P actually obtains. So you would expect necessarily P, therefore possibly P, and therefore you'd expect P. Okay. But, you see, in the logic of ethics, you would want to say in all possible worlds you ought to resist stealing. That's where the necessity comes from. But in some worlds, such resistance fails to obtain. Okay. So, now, a little bit more on the varieties of modality. Now, deontic logic is very unusual because it's an instance of necessity. Necessarily P, not implying actuality. You would expect it to follow, because if necessarily P is true, it's true in all possible worlds, and since all possible worlds include the actual world, you would expect it to be true in the actual world, but it isn't. Necessarily P implies P, only in what are called the elicit modalities. I tried to find a definition of this and didn't really find anything that helpful. They're the ones to do with truth, and they must be to do with truth and actuality. So, they are normally considered to be metaphysical modalities, logical and physical or gnomic, which respond to, which are determined by the laws of nature. So in the elicit modalities, necessary truth implies actual truth. It doesn't in some of the lower order systems. This is S5. Okay. So S5 is the strongest system, and it's the one with the notorious axiom that I'm not going to stop on now, because if I do, it'll bog us down forever. It's if something is possibly necessary, then it's necessary. And when Bob Hale put that on the board, we all went away very puzzled. Anyway, I'll move on. I've only talked about two ways in which the systems of modal logic that were set up map onto the kind of necessities that we talk about. Okay. My nice picture. Now, this is a diagram about possibilities. Now, logical possibility is the blue circle. It's the most open one. Anything which doesn't contradict the laws of logic, anything conceivable. used by Hume to say that anything you can imagine is possible. Okay. Now, so for Hume, spaceships exceeding the speed of light, flying pigs are possible. For Descartes, it's possible to imagine the mind and the body separated. So that's fine. Logical possibility would allow it. Metaphysical possibility won't. Now, metaphysical possibility, according to Kit Fine and Bob Hale, and I agree with them, which is how I've put their names there, are constrained by the natures or essences of the entities in the domain that you're discussing or quantifying over. Okay, and physical possibility, difference between physical and metaphysical. Physical possibility is constrained by the physical laws and constants of the universe we actually live in. So the metaphysical one you have to consider, because quite often physical possibility and metaphysical possibility come to the same thing. But if you think of universes which are nothing like ours, which are certainly a metaphysical possibility, but not a physical possibility. Now, what are the truth-makers of our mobile claims? I've only just started to think about this, so this is open to you guys. So let's put these... in a minute, I'm putting the things back. So the possible worlds apparatus that I've just gone through seems to give us a way of applying truth conditions and truth values to modal propositions, but it doesn't explain modality, which I think is probably why a lot of people don't like the possible worlds apparatus. So if we try to say why the modal statements we looked at earlier are true or false, we realise that we've already got to have some presuppositions, and they'll all be different, about how modality works, how the world works, before we arrive at a judgment using that apparatus. So what's it done? It's given us some nice little, the ability to prove nice little theorems. So, what are the truth makers? If the truth maker for non-modal statement is the way some things in the world are, following Peter, then the truth maker for a modal statement is the way some things in the world might be or might have been, but you have to observe the constraints imposed by the particular modality. So what do you think? So I'll put, there we are. So I think we could probably move to questions, but I think the thing to do, the thing that might be interesting to do just very quickly first is to look at what kind of modality is involved here. Pigs might fly, pigs couldn't fly. Now, that could be physical, could be metaphysical, it could be argued for. Okay, bachelors are male. Now, is that metaphysical?
No.
You don't think so, and I would agree with you. This is this is necessarily true, but it's through definition. The meaning of the word bachelor includes the meaning of the word male. Everybody sort of, I may have not expressed that as you would wish, but I think you believe it. Now, I'm not sure what kind of possibility this is, and I was probably an idiot to put it up, but I think we would agree that it's true. Why it's true, I don't know. Number four is definitely metaphysical. I think I am a human being is a necessary truth, because I don't think I could have been anything else but what I am. So I couldn't have been a poached egg or a football match. In any possible world. Now, people might disagree there. So logical possibility. Number five, that would be to do with the modalities of mathematics, which I'm not going to get involved in. Number of planets is necessarily even is false, because you just have to think about what planets. Why is it false?
Well, because it's logically possible to be true.
It's There is, it's certainly metaphysically possible, it's physically possible, it's logically possible for there to be any number of planets. But let's leave it for the moment. Impossible there could have been zero players. That's a matter of definition, isn't it?
Perhaps.
Oh, I suppose you could have had a football team and gradually, what Jonathan said was you could have had a team and every one of them got sent off. It will be controversial because I'll get electrons thrown at me. I think that 9 and 10 are both physically necessary and metaphysically necessary, but won't argue that here. That's the kind of interesting stuff that we normally do, but I'm not doing now. Okay, question? Okay, Helen, yes. How many of you want to ask questions? Actually, not that many. Okay, so I'll just take Helen's question then, and...
I just wanted to talk about number three.
Yes.
I wonder whether there's a danger in trying to analyse language in terms of logic. I think when people make such a statement, they're actually making substantive claims about the nature of elections, about the British voters. I think people are saying things like, it wasn't fixed. British voters change their minds about how they vote. They don't always vote the same way. I think... a lot of these claims are making quite substantive claims. We as speakers who operate, in a certain context, understand.
Yeah, I mean, I was sort of wondering whether, would the truth maker be something about David Cameron as a human being?
It's quite complex, I think.
Or something about elections, but more complicated than, it's something about both. And it's a real puzzle.
Given the actual physical state of the marks on the paper as they are now, he could be a philosopher.
you're stating a counterfact. You're saying he didn't win.
You're saying he did, and he must have done, because of the state of the world. The actual marks on the paper is just somewhere in
the book. Yeah, but...
It was true.
But before... Yes, but before getting into very short. Yes, but you're...
It's still true after the election that he could have won or not won.
It is true that he could have won because we consider the situation before the election took place, when we thought...
What you're saying about the nature
of elections. Well, I'm saying that when people make such statements, they're not actually talking about... possible worlds
I agree.
I think that they're making a statement about what they're saying is something like, actually, the 2015 election in Britain wasn't fixed, people weren't forced a certain way, elections show that people can change their mind up until the last minute. I think that's the sort of, if they're not getting into debate about whether...
Well, I would agree with you, which is why I think we ought to, there are some there are some statements which are true because of because of metaphysics, really. Anyway, someone else had a question. Shall we wait till afterwards?
Just following up yours, really.
Sorry? Just following up.
I think just pointing out that it's true before the election, it could have gone either way, and it's equally true after the election, it could have gone either way.
Yes. Yeah. That's because of how we use counterfactuals.
No, it's because of, as you say, it's because of our view of what kind of an election it was.
Okay. Okay, so counterfactuals give us a means of expressing the fact that we believe he could have lost that election. forget what I said. Let's, so that's just after 25 to, and we... Okay.